So that's Hebrews chapter 10, and I'm going to read verse 1 to 14. Do you follow along? The law is only a shadow of the good things that are coming, not the realities themselves. For this reason, it can never, by the same sacrifices, repeated endlessly year after year, make perfect those who draw near to worship. If it could, would they not have stopped being offered? For the worshippers would have been cleansed once for all, and would no longer have felt guilty for their sins. But those sacrifices are an annual reminder of sins, because it is impossible for the blood of bulls and goats to take away sins. Therefore, when Christ came into the world, he said, "Sacrifice and offerings you did not desire, but a body you prepared for me. With burnt offerings and sin offerings you were not pleased. Then I said, 'Here I am. It's written about me in the scroll. I've come to do your will, O God.'" First he said, "Sacrifices and offerings, burnt offerings and sin offerings you did not desire, nor were you pleased with them, although the law required them to be made." Then he said, "Here I am. I've come to do your will." He sets aside the first to establish the second. And by that will, we have been made holy through the sacrifice of the body of Jesus Christ once for all. Day after day, every priest stands and performs his religious duties. Again and again, he offers the same sacrifices, which can never take away sins. But when this priest had offered for all time one sacrifice for sins, he sat down at the right hand of God. I wonder if you've ever tried reading the Bible all the way through from the beginning. Sometimes people do this. They're like, "Right, I'm going to read the whole Bible." And they make a start. And you start with Genesis, and that's quite exciting. There are lots of stories in Genesis, so we enjoy that. And then we get to Exodus, and we think, "Well, this is fantastic, kind of being rescued from slavery." And then we get to about halfway through Exodus, and suddenly you get about 15 chapters just on the tabernacle. And it tells you about kind of lampposts and tables and furnishings. And if you manage to make it through Exodus, you kind of breathe a sigh of relief. And then it's Leviticus. And you're like, "Blimey, what have I let myself in for here?" And there is kind of sin offerings and fellowship offerings and this, that and other offerings. And there are sacrifices for just about everything under the sun. And if you just about get through Leviticus, well, then you hit Numbers. And let me tell you, Numbers is something else, because suddenly you're given a whole ancestry of all the priests. And you're like, "Who are these Kohites and Gershonites and all the rest of them? Why do I need to know the names of all of their families?" And you begin to think, "What has all of this got to do with me?" And I thought the Bible was a relevant book that kind of spoke to us today. And sometimes when we come across all these things, which are to do with the Old Testament priesthood, the sacrifices, the temples, the priests, we ask that question: what's it all about? Perhaps we think, "Isn't this a bit primitive and outdated, all this kind of sacrifice?" We might think, "Frankly, it's just a bit weird and obscure." And perhaps we think, "It's just a bit bloody and gruesome." And so we quickly turn back to the Sermon on the Mount and focus on forgiving our enemies and turning the other cheek and that kind of thing. But what I hope we're going to see today, we're not going to look through the whole of Leviticus, you might be pleased to hear, but what I hope we'll see is that actually some of these early chapters of the Bible, early books, particularly about all this stuff to do with priests, are central for understanding Jesus properly, and all that he came to do for us. The whole system was designed to point forward to him. So as Tim said, last week we saw how the prophets in the Old Testament pointed us forward to Jesus, our ultimate prophet. Today we're seeing how the priests and everything associated with them point forward ultimately to Jesus as well. And priests, in fact, are all about God making it possible for us to enjoy a relationship with him. Just on your first page there, you'll see a little verse, page 3. I put a little verse from Hebrews chapter 9 there, and it says this: "In fact, the law requires that nearly everything be cleansed with blood, and without the shedding of blood, there is no forgiveness." So the priests and the sacrifices were a way that people could be forgiven in order that they might have a relationship with God. And so we say, "Yeah, we love having a relationship with God as Christians." Well, this is central to it. So as we begin then, three key ingredients to the Old Testament priesthood. This is, if you like, a kind of rough guide. We'll kind of whiz through these things. And the first important thing to introduce you to is the tabernacle and the temple. God's plan was always to live with his people. But when people sinned, that was impossible because God was holy and people were sinful. Well, the tabernacle and then the temple provided a way for that to happen again, at least in part. And I've put that verse there from Exodus. This is talking about the tabernacle. Have them make a sanctuary for me, and I will dwell among them. Make this tabernacle and all its furnishings exactly like the pattern I will show you. She says key words, I will dwell among them. And the tabernacle was kind of like a big traveling tent. So this was in the days when the Israelites were still traveling through the wilderness. And God said, I want to travel with them. And so this special tent, the tabernacle, was how that would happen. And only the priests were allowed near it. Now, when they were in the land and no longer moving around, the tent was turned into a permanent structure. And that was the temple. And if you just turn over the page, you'll see a picture there of the temple. And you'll see various things. Right at the back there, you'll see the Holy of Holies. That was the bit where God kind of symbolically dwelt among his people. And we'll find out a bit more about that later. But one of the key things that happened in the temple is represented by that altar. Do you see it at the back, at the kind of top right-hand side of the picture there? And that takes us on to our second key ingredient of the Old Testament priesthood. We've had the temple. Secondly, is the sacrifices. And let me read that verse from Leviticus. It says this, the priest shall slaughter the goat for the sin offering for the people and take its blood behind the curtain. In this way, he will make atonement for the most holy place because of the uncleanness and rebellion of the Israelites. So you can see the big idea there. The Israelites are rebellious, it says, and unclean. God, on the other hand, is perfect and holy. And the only way that a holy God could dwell with people was if their sin was somehow dealt with. And that was the primary purpose of the sacrifices. So the idea is this, the death that the people deserved for their sin was paid for by an animal rather than a person. And the sacrifice, if you like, took away the sin. So that's the sacrifices, the other key ingredient. Finally, they were, of course, the priests. And the priests were the people who were kind of set apart to do all the work associated with the temple. Their job was to offer sacrifices, to oversee the whole process. They were crucial to the whole thing. Now, all of this seems very alien to us, doesn't it? The idea of temples and priests and sacrifices. But the great purpose of it all was that a very, very holy God might have a relationship with sinful people. And that means that one of the main things that the Old Testament priests reveal to us is this. They prove that we've got a problem. And that's our second point here. They prove that we've got a problem. We probably think, well, that's a bit of a weird way for God to have a relationship with people. Isn't it a bit overcomplicated? You know, the priests and the temple, the sacrifice, all the rest of it. And the point is, it is a bit weird, okay? It wasn't God's original intention to relate to people in this way. The original plan was a face-to-face, normal relationship. That was always his plan. But then we sinned, and that made it really complicated. The fact that there is now, in the Old Testament, a temple and sacrifice and priests are a graphic reminder that the Israelites have a problem. It's a problem we all naturally have. Have a look at Hebrews 10, verse 3. It says this, those sacrifices are an annual reminder of sin. You see, the temple and the priests and sacrifices, they were a way of kind of bridging the gap so that there could be still some kind of relationship between God and people. They were a reminder that in order to have a relationship with God, God would have to provide a way to make it possible now that the people had this problem of sin. And that way would involve priests and sacrifices. So actually, as we read these bits of the Old Testament, think, well, what does this have to do with me? Well, here's a few things that we can learn straight away. It reminds us that sin is a real problem in this world. It really does stop us from relating to God. It ruins our relationship with him. But they also show us that God is a God who wants to fix that problem, that even though we've messed up, he still wants a relationship with us. And that's why he kind of provided a system of sacrifices and so on that would make it possible. So that's the first thing then that the priests show. They show that we've got a problem. But moving on to our third point across the page. This is the main thing for today. Priests fail to solve that problem, but they point forward to Jesus, who does solve that problem. Actually, the priests and the temple and the sacrifices, they were never intended to be God's kind of ultimate fix for the problem of sin. They were there, if you like, to kind of show us the problem and point us forward to the ultimate priest. And that, of course, is Jesus. And this wonderful book of Hebrews that we have in our New Testaments goes into great detail to show us how the temple and sacrifices and priests actually all do this, kind of point forward to Jesus. And it's a book that wants us to appreciate that Jesus is the fulfillment of all of these things. He's the one we really need if we're going to have a relationship with God. And there are three ways that Jesus is much, much better than that Old Testament system. So we're going to have a look at some of these for a few minutes now. So first then, we'll compare the priests, the Old Testament versus Jesus. So first of all then, the priests. Let's have a look at Hebrews 7. Flick back with me. And we'll read verse 23 to 28. And see if you can, it's a kind of game of spot the difference, this next bit, basically. See if you can spot the difference between the Old Testament priests and Jesus. Let me read. Now, there have been many of those priests since death prevented them from continuing in office. But because Jesus lives forever, he has a permanent priesthood. Therefore, he's able to save completely those who come to God through him, because he always lives to intercede for them. Such a high priest meets our need, one who is holy, blameless, pure, set apart from sinners, exalted above the heavens. Unlike the other high priests, he does not need to offer sacrifices day after day, first for his own sins, then for the sins of the people. He sacrificed for their sins once for all when he offered himself. For the law appoints as high priests men who are weak, but the oath which came after the law appointed the Son, Jesus, who has been made perfect forever. Now, there are a few things in there which are a bit more complicated, but the big idea is pretty simple, isn't it? Priests, on the one hand, well, they are just as sinful as anyone else. You see that in verse 27, offering sacrifices for their own sin. So if you think of the kind of bridge thing, a priest is meant to be kind of bridge between God and the people. Well, it's a bridge that doesn't reach the other end because they themselves have this problem, whereby they can't relate to God properly because of their sin. Jesus, on the other hand, well, he has no sin. Do you see verse 26? He is holy, blameless, pure, set apart from sinners. Yes, he's fully human, so that he can relate perfectly to us, but he's also perfect. He's not weak like the other priests. Sin is no problem. And neither is death. So the other priests kept dying. Jesus, however, verse 24, he lives forever. And that means he can be like a permanent bridge that reaches both ends. So Jesus is the perfect priest, much better than those Old Testament priests who had their own sin problem. What about the sacrifices then? We'll flick over to Hebrews 10. And we read this passage earlier on. You can imagine if you were an Israelite, it would have been pretty traumatic, I think. You went through the same routine every single year. You know, you'd get a goat into the family, you'd probably give him a name and look after him for a while, and perhaps the kids would enjoy playing with the goat and taking it for walks, if that's what you do for a goat, maybe not. And all the rest of it. And then the same thing had happened. Dad had come and take the goat and lead him to the temple, and it'd be butchered. And then the next year, it would happen again, and again, and again. And after a while, you must have asked, is this actually working? After all, if it worked, why do you have to keep doing it? It's like if you have to keep doing your driving test. You know, it's a sure sign that you haven't passed it. If you have to do another sacrifice, well, it's a sure sign the last one hasn't completely worked. And you see, that's exactly what verse 1 and 2 says. For this reason, it can never by the same sacrifices repeated endlessly year after year make perfect those who draw near to worship. If it could, would they not have stopped being offered? Now, these sacrifices were a great reminder of sin, but what they couldn't actually do was remove that sin. And that's what it says in verse 3 and 4. Those sacrifices are an annual reminder of sin, because it is impossible for the blood of bull and goats to take away sin. You see, the big problem is this: an animal's death, how can that fairly represent a human sin? Well, it's not a fair substitute. And so, of course, it doesn't really work. Jesus' sacrifice, on the other hand, well, he sacrificed himself on the cross, and in so doing, perfectly removes sin. Have a look at verse 10 of chapter 10. Says this: by that will we have been made holy through the sacrifice of the body of Jesus Christ once for all. And all those animal sacrifices were just a picture pointing forward to the ultimate sacrifice that Jesus would make on the cross. And did you see verse 10? It is once for all. And that's why we're told in verse 12, when this priest had offered for all time one sacrifice of sins, he sat down at the right hand of God. He sits down because it's finished. The job has been completely done. And that's why when Jesus died on the cross, he cried out, "It is finished." Because he offered one sacrifice that actually deals with the problem of sin. Now, without the Old Testament sacrifices, it would be very, very difficult for us to know what was happening on the cross. You know, it would just be a random guy dying. But through the Old Testament sacrifices, God has taught us that in order for us to be forgiven, someone else must pay for our sins in our place. And that payment would involve the shedding of blood. That's what he taught us through the Old Testament sacrifices. And that meant when Jesus arrives and dies on a cross, shedding his blood for forgiveness, well, we can be sure this is God's ultimate plan for forgiveness. So Jesus, the perfect sacrifice. What about the final comparison, which is the relationship that we are able to have with God as a result? Now, the whole point of the sacrifices was that it would restore people to enjoying a relationship with God. But whilst it kind of did that in the Old Testament, it was pretty limited. Just have a look back at chapter 9 and verses 6 to 8 with me. And he's talking here about that tabernacle and the temple that we were thinking about earlier. It says this: when everything had been arranged like this, the priests entered regularly into the outer room to carry on their ministry. But only the high priest entered the inner room, and only once a year, and never without blood, which he offered for himself and for the sins of the people had committed in ignorance. The Holy Spirit was showing by this that the way into the most holy place had not yet been disclosed as long as the first tabernacle was still standing. So the inner room was that kind of holy of holies in the temple. It was the kind of most sacred parts. And only one person once a year gets to access where God actually dwells, which is hardly exactly a close relationship for everyone, is it? And the point is made really clear in verse 8. The way into the most holy place hasn't yet been disclosed. So through the tabernacle, there's really limited access to God. But through Jesus, access is absolutely guaranteed. Let's have a look at Hebrews 10, verses 19 to 22. And this is our last little passage to look at. And it says this: "Therefore, brothers, since we have confidence to enter the most holy place," talking about the presence of God there, "by the blood of Jesus, by a new and living way opened up for us through the curtain, that is his body. And since we have a great high priest over the house of God, let us draw near to God with sincere hearts, in full assurance of faith, having our hearts sprinkled to cleanse us from a guilty conscience." It's an amazing change, isn't it? Beforehand, one man once a year. Now, anybody who trusts in Jesus can have access into God's very presence. I think we kind of sometimes take this for granted, but in the Old Testament, they'd have been absolutely flabbergasted by this. So it says in verse 22, we can draw near to God. We don't need to have a guilty conscience because Jesus is our perfect priest who sacrificed himself. And that means we can enjoy a perfect relationship with God once again. You see, all the blood and sacrifice was just a big visual aid to show that we've got a problem. But that through Jesus' sacrifice, our perfect priest, that problem of sin can be dealt with and our relationship with God can be fixed. Now, the guy writing Hebrews was actually writing to a bunch of Christians who were saying, "Oh, well, this kind of Christian stuff is okay, but it's a bit kind of spiritual. I really like the kind of sacrifice of the Old Testament. It's so kind of tangible." And what the writer's trying to say is, why would you go back? It never worked. It was never meant to work. It was always meant to point forward to Jesus. So stick with him, and whatever you do, don't move on from him. And that, as we finish, just over the page, is why Jesus is a must-have priest. Because only Jesus can completely deal with our sin and our guilt. Lots of ways we try and cope with guilt in life. Only Jesus can objectively remove it through his sacrifice for our sins. Only Jesus is always there for us. And we saw earlier that he's a faithful high priest who intercedes for us. That means that he's always there to present our case before God the Father. He's always listening to us, and he never dies. He's always present. Some of our best friends, who may be as reliable as they are able, still let us down because they're human. Well, here is someone who will never let us down. He's a faithful priest for us. And finally, Jesus really does sympathize with our weakness. And I'm just going to finish our time by reading these verses to you. It's Hebrews 4, verses 14. It says this: "Therefore, since we have a great high priest who has gone through the heavens, let us hold firmly to the faith we profess. For we do not have a high priest who is unable to sympathize with our weakness, but we have one who has been tempted in every way, just as we are, yet was without sin." Sometimes when we're going through a hard time in life, we can think, well, what does Jesus know about anything? You know, he was God. It was easy for him. But here it says, no, he was tempted in every single way. Every bit of hardship you experience, Jesus knows what it feels like. And that means when you take your problems to him as our perfect priest, he knows what you're going through. You know, he's not harsh and unsympathetic. He weeps with us in our sorrows. He understands.